dive into our interviews this time. We wanted to mix things up a little bit and do a quick let's talk about the concept of shipping as a whole, both to give you guys some context and to define some terms and just sort of explore the concept as a whole before we ask our guests about their specific feelings about shipping and then talk about some other shipping topics ourselves. So when we were thinking about this, I was sort of pondering the question, and I feel like you have an answer to this flame, or at least a hypothesis. But like, why do you think that people have ships or feel shippy?
I mean, it's human nature that we crave connection and we crave intimacy on some level. However we define that intimacy and with whomever we define it, it is an exceptionally rare person that feels no emotional connection with other human beings. It's actually classified as a disorder in the DSM. If you can form no emotional attachments with any other living creature. So there's an innate sense that we all want to feel that connection with somebody, whether that's romantic love or platonic love or, you know, whatever along those spectrums. And I think for the longest time, the largest majority of the population feels romantic love for another individual. And so the largest percentage of the population can identify with that. We kind of know what it feels to have a crush or what it feels like to fall in love, or we know what it feels like to, I mean, like what, find me and a wet, like I always joke, find me a teenage girl who was not Eponine in Les Mis at some point in their lives. Like she is the patron saint of teenage girls, like pining for the boy that you desperately want and you are friend zoned so hard. He doesn't even realize he loves you till you're dead. Spoiler alert for a musical from 1982. But we all know all of those feelings in some way, shape, or form. So that's a piece of it. I think the other piece of it is that no matter how much we try, Hollywood is never as interested in romance as we want them to be, except in a rom-com. So if we're doing all these other major properties that we do fandoms around, like Buffy or X-Files or Star Trek or Marvel, we are always more interested in humans than the creators seem to be on a level. And we always want to know about their interior lives more than the budget office does. And so it's the easiest piece to create as well. And I think we've seen this, especially last year with our fandom, is that as things have gotten more and more difficult in the ether world, more conversations that I've read are like, well, now I really just want fluffy domestic stuff. I really just want people being happy together. I want to remember that there is healing at the end of this, or people writing really, really dark stuff to remember that it can always get worse. But it was that kind of innate, I need to connect to the humanity in these people. And that's how I can sort out my feelings about offline humanity. So I think the huge part of why we do it, I don't know if that resonates with you or if that makes sense to you or you disagree.
No, yeah, I think that catharsis and vicarious emotional connection is probably the foundation of it all. And everyone sort of builds it up for them a little bit differently. And once you're sort of into it, it can become a coping mechanism and a cathartic experience. Or if you struggle processing certain emotions, I think that reading expressions of some other emotions can help you sort of like have an emotional experience that isn't directly challenging or confronting. So yeah, I think that like why we fic in general probably has a lot to do with all of that as well. But the why shipping, I mean, I know for me, I definitely have that, like I enjoy that vicarious feeling. And we've talked before about the like tingle that you get at the moment when it's like, oh, the confession's gonna happen. And I know everyone doesn't get that, but for me, that peak feeling of like vicarious emotion that's followed by catharsis is when it's been angsty, angsty, angsty. And then there's gonna be the big reveal that like there was a misunderstanding or someone's gonna be like, but it's because I love you or something like that. And when I get to that moment, I find that really satisfying. And when you couple a desire for a vicarious or a cathartic romance, or a need for romance that isn't being satisfied by the properties that you enjoy, when you couple that with what we've talked about before as being one of the fundamental appeals of fanfic, that there is safety and familiarity, and you don't have to put emotional energy into getting to know new people. When you couple those things, shipping's kind of inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, statistically, I mean, this is my, I counted like technical 11th fandom, I think, that I've dabbled or participated in on some level, if we include general Broadway fandom that I was in, that I still am in. And there have always been, you know, stories that don't involve romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. I've encountered them in all of them, but they've just, in the ships, in the fandoms I'm in, they're never the most popular. They're never the ones that everyone talks about. And people, you know, I was in fandoms before shipping was quite as, automatic, I guess, now in a way.
Oh, okay.
Quite as contentious. I don't remember, we'll get into that in a couple seconds, but I don't remember getting as much hate for the ships that I had in Dawson's Creek as I do now in Marvel. That's just a different world. But it was always kind of this understanding that if you were a fandom, you were there for the emotional reason. And then very, very quickly, you were there for the porn on some level. And that was always, it's really funny. I'm reminded there's a really great podcast that I love called How Did This Get Made? And it's with a couple of comedians sit around and talk truly terrible movies, or not always terrible ones, but like, how did this possibly get made? And they did a couple of the Netflix Christmas ones this past year. And my favorite host, Jason Mantzoukas, just kept saying, but these people deserve to fuck. Why can't you let them fuck? And Mr. Flame and I sat there laughing, and I was like, the cry of fanfic writers everywhere.
This is our hashtag.
Why won't you let them fuck? And I can't even count the number of properties that I have watched, from West Wing up to Greatest Showman. And my question is, why won't you let them fuck? And that could be because I'm a thirsty, horny person. But according to AO3, I'm not alone. So I think there's also the very human thirsty element, where we are not comfortable talking about sex out loud. We always want to talk about it in our brain, our imagination, our fantasy lives. We always want other input to know what other people think about it. But talking about it using out loud is often incredibly intimidating. Mm-hmm. And so introducing other aspects of sexuality into a fantasy life entirely in your imagination is so incredibly appealing. I was actually speaking to somebody who identifies very strongly as asexual, has no desire for sexual relationships in offline life, is in a completely different fandom, is not in our fandom, and we just got to Chang, and said that the only fic they read on AO3 is E-rated because they want to know what it is like.
Oh, that's interesting.
So we all encounter this stuff for different reasons, but I think, you know, I think that covers some of the broad categories, at least.
Yeah, and there's definitely people who engage with fandom from a totally gen perspective. They like they're in Marvel for the fan family. They like writing friendship fic, stuff like that. Though I'd argue that, you know, we can say that friendships are still ships of a variety. It can be a similar emotional experience to write people forming and experiencing a friendship. They don't have to have sex. So I think that even groups of fans who would consider themselves gen ficers or shipless still are seeking some similar feelings from fandom. And I'm sure there are many people who don't, and it's an entirely different experience for them. Maybe they like the world building and that's it.
Which is something you obviously deeply resonate with,
right? You're out there doing your conlangs like Tolkien. Good for you. Draw those maps. Someone has to, because it's not going to be me.
I will build your train schedules. But if you're listening to this and you're like, Flame and Ferret are totally off their rocker, I don't care about relationships at all, I just want to talk about defeating superheroes or villains or whatever, please come talk to me.
Yeah, that would be fascinating, because we would love
to chat with you.
Spaces where we'd hear that a lot, though I have heard some people talk about their gen experience in fandom, and I mean, it's definitely a minority experience, and even just hearing from people that it can be so hard to find gen fics of the nature that they want, or that they feel that their fics don't get any attention or their art doesn't get any attention because it is gen goes to show again that it is a minority group of fandom that engages with fandom solely from a gen perspective. But interesting. Also, I'm you know, we're supposed to be defining terms in this segment and we didn't explain what gen meant.
I was about to say, so Ferret, what does gen mean?
Well, it actually has two meanings, which makes it kind of confusing for people. Something that is G-rated, especially on a platform like AO3, is for general audiences. And that means that it contains nothing that would be inappropriate for essentially a 13-year-old to read, because that's the minimum age requirement to be on these platforms. So we use gen in that sense to mean a fic that is G-rated, i.e. it has no violence, no sexual content, no bad language words, no challenging topics, kind of. But as a fandom community, and that G-rated, you could use that in other spaces as well where they use similar letters, not everywhere. But for general audiences, that's used for movies, music, and stuff as well. Fandom has also co-opted the term gen to mean a creation, a fan work, I suppose, that does not contain a romantic relationship. So when we talk about genfic in that sense, we're saying it's a fic about Tony and Tony alone. He may have friendships in the story, but you wouldn't tag a fic with a slash in it in the relationship section on AO3. Or it might be about all the Avengers coming together as a family, or, you know, even if it has a strong interpersonal relationship that isn't romantic, like a friendship fic, some people would still call that gen fic, not everybody would. So it's definitely it's not a hard defined line, but when we're talking about gen fic in right now with shipping, we're saying a fic without a romantic relationship in it. You may also hear people talk about gen fic as in G-rated fic, which could still have a romantic relationship. It's just, you know, they hold hands, maybe kiss, and that is all.
Yeah, or they're exhausted parents trying desperately to make it through the night because their child can't sleep, which is, I think most of my gen fics are around that kind of time.
Yeah.
Most of my G-rated fic. I have one gen fic that has no establishing relationships in it at all, and it's an entire team fic, team solving a problem fic. And it was, I can make the argument that there are 7 different ships in that one. And I tagged none of them, kind of see what people got out of it and see if they read between the lines. But just kind of as an experiment, and the particular topic it was about and the puzzle I wanted them to solve. But it's not something I see myself going back to. It wasn't nearly as much fun as making the boys do the kissy kissy.
While we're talking about terminology, I guess we should maybe dive into the history of the term a little bit as well and how it was kind of born. So the term shipping all on its own, something that we use a lot, but new people in fandom might not even know what it means or where it came from. But it's short for relationship. So to ship two people is to see them in a relationship or want them in a relationship or portray them in a relationship. It's generally agreed that it started in X-Files fandom. Obviously, when we're talking about some of this history stuff, we have to thank fan lore, of course, but also we're doing our best with history. Not everything is available on the internet, and things like zines and fandom conversations and documents and convention pamphlets get lost. So, and if you remember the interview that we had, OTW volunteer who was talking about
Acts of Tekla, yeah,
yes, and sending your fandom documents in for historical preservation. this is the kind of thing that we can determine when we have that.
Dr. Ann Jamison in her book, Fic, essentially says that it may have existed before X-Files, but the reason that we can all attribute it to X-Files is because the true breakdown at fandom was about people who wanted to read about relationships versus people who wanted to read about aliens.
Yeah.
It was a real split in that fandom over what kind of content kind of transformative works were created.
Yeah, and so the people who were the shippers were the group of people that specifically were in fandom for ships. And while now looking at it, it might be like, well, you know, as we were saying, the vast majority of people are in fandom for ships. It wasn't always that case. And there were definitely fandoms. I mean, if you think about comic book fandom in its earlier days, you could argue that it wasn't about shipping at all. Like, this was comic book stores and mostly boys. And it was about fighting villains and maybe even a little role playing and stuff like that, but it wasn't about shipping the characters in the story. So this has been a development of fandom over time. But with shipping came many other terms, many other ways for people to divide things up, talk about themselves, for other people to talk about them. And one of my favorites is smush names or portmanteaus, where ship names are created based on smushing together the two names of the characters that are being shipped. So obviously we have Stony, Stucky, Stecconi for ours. But my first fandom was Buffy and my first ship was Spuffy, which is Spike and Buffy. And I'll forever be fond of that particular smush name. And Buffy is considered one of the ways that smush names as a thing were popularized. Before that, most people wrote out the ship name entirely with the slash in the middle. And it wasn't until like sort of pop slash fandom, so like Bandom and NSYNC and stuff like that, people were using smush names then. And it kind of blew up in the early 2000s with particularly with Buffy, but also with a lot of other fandoms around that time period, where there was a big boom in internet activity for fandom and internet spaces, and communication got larger.
And speaking of the word slash, that the shortening of the word slash to mean same-sex ships, which for a very long time fandom exclusively meant male-male ships, but that's a separate conversation we can have another time. It comes to us really from Star Trek and from Kirk slash Spock or K slash S, which was the code that a lot of fanzines used and fandom communication used to explain what that was going to be. I think we just read on Fanlore that the first published Kirk Spock slash fic was in like 1984. Like, this thing has been around for a long time. And it took a lot of different evolutions. People sometimes used it for that and sometimes didn't. But by the time we hit the late 90s, early 2000s, and definitely by the time we hit Miss Scribe and that whole thing that we talked about in episode 15 of this podcast, slash is known for being a same-sex transformative work. And it comes down to that at that point, which is a good reminder, again, for anyone who hasn't been around fan in a while or doesn't remember, that the idea of slash ships was a massive controversy for a long time. And it's now, you know, het ships are the ones that don't get written a lot. But 20 years ago, writing slash ships was a bit of a decision in a way, in terms of fandom and in terms of exposure and all those kind of other things we talk about. So fandom has always had evolutions when it comes to relationships. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah, and if it wasn't obvious, the reason why the term is slash is because, as we still write them now, the relationships were written with one name slash the other name. And groups of people who participated in creating slash works were called slashers for a lot of time. I don't think that we really use slashers as a term anymore.
No, I think that tends to mean like slasher movies.
And there were definitely spaces where it was being used as almost a derogatory term. It was like, you know, there's the gross slashers who just want to write boys kissing, but we're here to write about aliens or what have you. And that was very much the argument of the time. Now we sort of almost assume slash is the default, which has given us the term het, which means a heterosexual ship. So that would be ships with opposite sex couples. And now you almost need to clarify if something's het versus assuming that slash would be the default, which is interesting. And people have also started using femslash to distinguish between female, female, and male, male, which the term slash has mostly come to cover. So yeah, that's kind of like, oh, and even we don't do this anymore, thankfully. I think AO3 was a big part of wiping this out because AO3 took the stand that all of their ship names are going to be alphabetical. So when you see your ship tag on AO3 and it says James Bucky Barnes slash Tony Stark, Bucky comes first because of the B in Barnes and Stark is second. And AO3 said that that is 100% how they were going to do it. And that has become more of a standard. But there was a time, and there are still fandoms and still communities, where you would write the ship name when you, when people didn't really tag their fic, but when you had the description of what your fic was, you'd write your ship name with the top first and the bottom second. So if you wrote Kirk Spock, then the sex in the story, Kirk would top, and the other way around, Spock was topping. But that's definitely fallen out of fashion.
Yeah. And then there's a whole other category of ships that we don't cover that much on the pod, simply because we don't engage in them. But again, anyone who engages in these worlds, we'd love to talk to you. But the idea of self-shipping, which is kind of the term that we got to get self-insert or reader insert and all of these evolutions of how humans could write transformative works with using either them, like not having to use two characters. So you could write Tony with, you know, an original character, that's very valid, or Tony with you know, your own name, or Tony with, you know, now there's coding, right? Or like you can search a website and it, if you write yes, no, something, your name gets replaced.
It's not so, yes, no, it's your name.
There you go. I don't know. This is not my world. This doesn't tick my boxes. So I don't know about it. So that's a whole other thing too. And it's, I know my first, the fandoms that I was in before this did not use its reader to kind of talk about that general thing, that general category of fic. So I was very confused when I first got into fandom, first got into Marvel fandom. So if you were like me and took a fandom break and didn't know what X reader meant, that's kind of the smushing of offline life and fandom life into a transformative work.
Yeah, so reader insert's fascinating in that it's often written in second person. So it'll be you walk down the street. And then, yeah, it uses that, there's Chrome plugins and stuff that can take the little code that people write, which is Y/N, and replace it with whatever name you want. So you can put your own name in, or maybe you wanna put someone else's name in. That's your own business. But we also have, you might see self-cessed as well versus self-shipping. So self-shipping would be when the creator themselves ships themselves with a character. So if I wanted to kiss Captain America, that would be self-shipping. Self-cessed would be if the character is shipped with another version of themselves. And if you want an amazing experience, an amazing trip into fandom history, then you should look at the, we'll link it in the show notes. The there's a video by Sarah about the Onceler fandom, which is fascinating.
Fascinating.
The Onceler goes through a transformation during the story, and with a lack of other characters to ship him with, and him being kind of the iconic shippable character, fandom decided to ship him with himself. And so you get the pre-transformation Onceler being shipped with the post-transformation Onceler. And it is a fascinating watch to check, to dive into how this came about and what the fandom was like and what self-cessed can be like in a community, because we've probably, like, we've got the multiverse, so like we definitely have experiences of, there's a lot of popular fics with multiple Tonys or multiple Steves, but I feel like Onceler is like peak self-cessed fandom. If you want to explore that a little bit more, we'll link that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I love fics where pre-Serum Steve and post-Serum Steve somehow have to do something together. Fascinates me. Bill Longbow is running one right now with Tony, both Steves and Bucky, as we record this. So it's we can play around with that as well in our fandom. But I would concur with Ferret that Onceler was a very specific thing. And that video is fascinating. So we will definitely link it in the show notes. in terms of other things that other terms that you may want to know, other things you may want to, you may have heard Ferret talk about ship manifesto on this pod before, which is something that the Cap IM community has for Stony. And a lot of fandoms had it for their own ships. And these were meta essays people wrote to defend why their ship was the best ship. These were much more popular. I think they were, for in my understanding of fandom history, they were more popular before AO3. They were more popular on LiveJournal and more popular on closed link sites than necessarily now, just because I think the nature of how we share fandom information, like Tumblr definitely has fandom manifestos, but we don't really reblog long stuff on Tumblr as much as we reblog short stuff, which was different on LiveJournal. We will make sure to link the Stony ship manifesto in the show notes to give you an idea of what it looked like, because it is definitely a formative thing for many people in the Stony fandom. I've never read it, ironically, because my entire ship manifesto came from reading Ferret and Saber's Fix and just deciding that the ship worked for me. So I don't have like grand arguments about why I just like the fix. But it's definitely something that you should have access to exploring if defending your ship, even in your own soul, is an important part of your fandom journey. We want you to have access to that information.
I think that one of the reasons why ship manifestos used to be more popular is that fandom used to be a lot more centered around canon than it is now. And if you were going to diverge from canon, then you had to almost justify it. And there were definitely spaces where it was frowned upon to diverge from fandom, and sort of building this concept of AUs and just being able to write whatever we want and changing whatever we want has been an evolving thing. And so one method for sort of creating a foundation for a ship so that it felt safe to blast off from there was to create these ship manifestos that kind of justified the ship. They would often take canon material as explanation why the ship was shippy. I was thinking about like probably Xena fandom would have been a good example for that. I presume there are many ship manifestos out there, but I haven't done the research, but that was a case where the ship was never canonized, really, but there was a lot there. And by creating a ship manifesto, they can say, look, here's all the shippy moments. Here's all the ways that we were shown subtextually that there is a relationship there, and that sort of justifies a ship. Nowadays, we don't feel the need to justify our ships anymore. People are a lot more free to just write whatever they want, and communities are much less shamey about, you know, oh, well, where is it in canon? Show me the moment. And therefore, ship manifestos just become, instead of being meta arguments, they're more like just celebrations. And I feel like people do that sort of all the time. Every list of headcanons, every gift set is almost a mini part of a grander ship manifesto that's become the fandom community at large.
That's true. And I'll tell you, you know, as we record this in January, was it about a month ago? The entirety of Tumblr was a Destiel ship manifesto.
Oh yeah, so, that was a thing.
I haven't watched that show since the year of our Lord 2009. And yet I knew every moment of those last episodes. So, man, do people have feelings? And I love them. I love supporting fandom feelings, as you guys know.
So moving on from some of the historical terms, we have a couple that you might actually hear on this episode, or you may have heard us talking about before. And we want to make sure you know what they mean, just in case you don't. So we are definitely going to be talking about mono shipping versus multi shipping versus poly shipping. Mono shipping, mono meaning one, means that you have one ship in that fandom and almost all of your fandom interactions are about that ship. So for instance, I'm a mono shipper in Supernatural. I only ship Destiel. I have no other ships in the fandom and nothing else that I read or consume by choice. Multi shipping is when you have multiple ships within a fandom. So Flame and I are both multi-shippers in Marvel. We both ship more than one relationship that involve different people in them. And lastly, poly-shipping is a ship that contains more than two people. So people who are polyamorous in some way. So we both ship Stacconi. That's a common poly ship in Marvel, but there are many, and you're going to hear people talk about that today. You can be a poly, you can be a combination of things. You can be a poly shipper, but also a mono shipper. So you only ship one ship in a fandom, but it's a ship containing more than two people. You could be a poly shipper and a multi shipper. So you've got maybe some ships that are two people, some ships that are three people, one ship that's six people. generally people fall into these categories. It's sort of hard not to, because the lines don't really overlap very much. So depending on what you ship, you might be a mono, a multi, or a poly shipper, or some combination thereof.
The other one that you'll hear in this episode, and then also just throughout fandom, is OTP, which is one true pairing, and is, I'll say I use it even though I don't have one true pairing. So I think people also use it facetiously sometimes. OTP and OT3 or OT6 or OT11, Mazel Tov, are all kind of changeable a little bit, in that this is the thing you're here for. So, and for multi-shippers, I know sometimes we use it as the thing you love the most, or like your default ship. Like, sure, I ship a ton of things in Marvel, but my default ship is actually Winter Iron, believe it or not. That's the one I like to go to when having a bad day, I read Winter Iron fic. And I love Sony with my whole heart, but Winter Iron just slaps a little bit stronger for me. So, but in terms of poly shipping in Marvel, I read several poly ships. My ultimate poly ship will always be Stacconi, for any host of reasons, including that it's my first poly ship that I shipped in any fandom. Actually, I had never poly shipped before I came here, and Bucky just made it too hard.
Me too.
To deny.
OT3. Some people have an OTP and an OT3. It's definitely like softened in meaning over time. It used to be that if you had an OTP, it was like, I have forsaken all other ships for my OTP. It is the one true pairing. But it's definitely become just a way to say my strongest, my favorite, my go-to, as you say. So yeah, I would say my OTP is Stony. Even though it's not actually my favorite ship in Marvel, it's my natural default and how I got here and where I've spent the most time and where most of my fics are. So, but yeah, that's had some historical shift over time. So you may see, especially if you're looking at older things, maybe some old ship manifestos on LJ, you'll see OTP used a little bit more strongly than it is now.
Yeah, and if Acts of Techless Threat comes true and they do actually import all of my West Wing fic, all of my author notes on that West Wing fic talk about OTP being Josh and Donna. So
there you go.
You may. The last one is bicycle, which is one of my favorite fandom words. And it's the idea that you may have thoughts about ships or feelings about ships, but really what you're here for is this one character, and you'll kind of ship them a lot of different people. They are the bicycle that gets you around.
It's from the idea of the town bicycle, which I guess isn't a very nice thing to call somebody, but everyone's had a ride. That's the idea. So it's the character that you'd let anyone take a ride.
When we will talk later in community talks, we asked a lot of you guys, shipping was like for you. And there was several commentary that was like, I have ships that I like, but really Tony is my bicycle. Or really, I'm just here for Bucky to be happy with whoever makes him happy. Those are common entities, I think, in fandoms as large as ours. I don't encounter bicycle talk in smaller fandoms in terms of characters like Supernatural, but in fandoms with larger character bases, I hear the term bicycle a lot. There's a lot of bicycle talk in Game of Thrones, for instance. So, yeah. And that can look like, but I think once you get into smaller stuff, like I don't hear bicycle talk in Veronica Mars. So right.
Yeah, for sure. You kind of have to have enough characters that there's a town that can take a ride, you know?
Can take a ride, yeah.
So we hope that gives you kind of a basis for when we're talking about these things and maybe a little bit of history. We will definitely link some of the fan lore stuff we've talked about, and that is a fantastic place to start if you want to explore more, or if there's a term you hear either us or other people talk about that you don't know. Obviously, you can ask in Discord, but fan lore will give you all of the historical context that is available. So it's an amazing resource. If you don't know what fan lore is, it's basically the wiki for fandom. So it's extensive and gorgeous, and that can be a deep dive. But next up, Flame is going to do two interviews back to back, and you'll get to hear the perspective from multiple people about their experiences as shippers.